Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. The internationals all start tomorrow, so yeah, I'm pleased. Cricket's back, finally, in some capacity, even though there's no crowds still in England, well, in the England fixtures, but yeah, I'm just pleased there's some Lancashire Premier League on TV as well, which I may give a bit of a watch, a new comp there. So, yeah, who knows what that's going to be like. But, yeah, I'm all good. Thank you.
Well, that's good to hear, mate. I'm glad that you're doing well. And also joining us on the County Cricket Podcast today is Leicestershire and former Durham opener, Scott Steele. So, Scott, mate, first things first, thank you very much for coming on to our podcast today. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Not too bad, really. Got up, went a bit of a run this morning and then just chilled, really. Trying to build some stuff for the new house because we move in tomorrow. So a lot of flat pack to do and a lot of swearing involved.
Yeah. What are the DIY skills like, Scott?
Not very good. I don't like to really read the instructions because I think I can do it. And then I get halfway through and then realise that I did a bit wrong. So I need to look through the instructions and redo it again.
What a way to start the podcast. Very, very unique. But talking of the podcast today then, let's just quickly go through the structure. So of course, we're going to start by talking about Scott's early cricketing journey. We're going to talk about his favourite times at the Riverside with his beloved Durham. Then we're going to touch upon his move to Leicestershire this season, which we're looking forward to seeing you at Grace Road in 2021, Scott. And then of course, we are going to wrap up today's podcast with everybody's favourite segment, which is teammates. So Scott, first things first then, to kickstart the podcast, why don't we have a look at your early cricketing journey then? What's your first ever memory of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
I remember I have an older brother, Callum, who's 2 years older, and my dad used to play for just a local club near our house. So basically from the age of 4 or 5, we used to always go down and watch him and play on the sidelines. I'd bowl at my brother and he'd bowl at me, or if dad was out, then he'd come join in. And then I think we got to around 6, 7 and a different local club, which my brother still plays at now. My dad was just like, oh, we'll go down there. They had a taster session on a Sunday or something. So they were like, oh, we'll have a look down there. And basically we both got there and been doing it ever since, really.
I think that's quite a nice journey into cricket, really, obviously. Yeah. I mean, that's a similar age to both myself and you, Joe. You started around that age as well, didn't you?
Yeah, sort of 12 years ago now, maybe a little bit more. Do you remember your first session, Aaron?
Mine would have been in school and it would have been the old classic diamond cricket. Because we had a coach who used to come into my primary school, and he had something to do with the Warwickshire Cricket Board, I think. He was called Steve, very, very nice bloke. And he gave me a cricket bat for one season for being the most improved player, and a ball for being the best fielder, which was absolutely...
I agree with that, though.
Exactly, exactly. And that's probably where the love of fielding came from on my end. But yeah, that's my first ever memories, playing a bit of diamond cricket. And for those who don't know diamond cricket, oh my days, you have to play it. that was a staple in primary school sport. Any PE, diamond cricket, as soon as that came out, you get the stumps out, the bowlers in the middle. Oh, that was absolutely class. And Scott, did you ever play diamond cricket? Because obviously we're not that much younger than you, Scott. Was that a staple of your childhood as well?
Yeah, we used to play it a lot on the sessions when you were younger at the club I played for. But my school didn't really play any cricket. They used to play the odd game in PE or sports day, but it was mainly football and rugby and hockey and that. So only really played it at club cricket level.
Jeez. Did you find it hard to stay interested, especially when obviously I assume club training was only once a week for you? Well, it was for me at least. So did you find it sort of hard to stay interested?
I don't think I did. I think I played football as well, but I think because my dad played cricket and my older brother played, so I think it was kind of if we weren't watching dad, then me and brother would be playing in the garden, or
still playing,
we'd have our sessions on Sundays, I think it was. So we still managed to play it, and then in the winter we just played football up until the season started again. And then as soon as dad would go to winter nets or he'd start the season, we'd be back at cricket. So I think it was kind of always there.
Yeah, I guess it's always good to have a family influence, isn't it? I mean, there's some obviously famous father son pairings, if you like the Broads, for example, and that's on a more obviously international sort of scene. Yeah, it's always good to have a father son kind of thing, and mother daughter and whatever, family sort of influence in your cricket, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And Joe, you've got that with your dad, haven't you?
Yeah, my dad's sort of always been a cricket fan as well, and then he kind of I guess it's passed it on, didn't he, really? I guess that's kind of the phrase you could use there, passed on his love for cricket to me, so, and his love for football as well. So yeah, like I say, family influence is quite an important thing in life, obviously, and in cricket it's no different.
Mine didn't. I actually took him to his first ever cricket game last year, which was quite funny. I mean, usually it's the other way around. But for years, he was like vehemently denying that he was just like going, don't like cricket, boring, this, that, the other. Took him last year to the World Cup game between Australia and South Africa. He quite enjoyed it. And then we were going to go to the T20 Blast game exactly a few weeks later, Warwickshire versus Lancashire Old Trafford, and it got rained off. So that was good. But
always gets rained off. So.
So how come you got into cricket then? If you didn't have like your dad or someone that you were going with, how did you get into it and enjoy it just from watching it?
Well, in terms of watching cricket, it was 2008, would have been the IPL. And I do actually remember it because I just stumbled across it. I can't remember if it was YouTube or it might have been a website with IPL highlights or something on. But as soon as I watched it, it was the KKR RCB match. As soon as I watched that, I was instantly hooked. And from there, I watched Warwickshire the next year. And funnily enough, talking to Steve from earlier, he gave me my first tickets as well to Glamorgan versus Warwickshire in the CB40.
Steve's done a lot for you.
I know, yeah.
And your cricketing journey.
Yeah, technically he did, yeah. I've still got the bat upstairs. Still got pictures from that day. Yeah, come to think of it, Steve was quite good in putting me on the cricketing journey. But yeah, and then obviously in the same year as well, we had the Ashes, and yeah, from there it kind of just spiraled, to be honest. But again, this isn't the cricket connoisseur podcast. This is the Scott Steele podcast, of course. So Scott, I do just want to flip that question on you, because we keep on talking about cricketing inspirations here, and obviously you mentioned your dad, your brother as well. But who in the cricketing world really stood out to you in those early stages?
I remember when I was younger, like we used to go to a couple of Durham games, and I was in like the age group stuff for Durham, and I was also a wicketkeeper when I was younger, for brief bit, just because I don't really know how I got into it, but I used to like diving around, and I thought the keeper was like important, and he used to dive and get good catches, so I decided to be a wicketkeeper for a little bit. And then Phil Mustard was wicketkeeper at the time at Durham, so I used to always look up at him because he had Puma gear, so like I got all the Puma gear, and then he was also a batter wicketkeeper, so I used to always try to be the same as him. And then I think as I got older, I just like watching a lot of people, like Chris Gayle, McCullum, Stokes, De Villiers, just a lot of different players, really.
Ex-Lanxville Mustard as well for like two games. So
you are reaching there, Joe. You are reaching.
If you play for Lanxville one game, you play for Lanxville one game. So if you play for Warwickshire, then you're ex-Warwickshire, aren't you? So yeah. He's quality.
Great keeper.
Yeah, for sure.
For all the listeners out there, let us know on Twitter at the County Crick 2. Phil Mustard, Durham or Lanx, please do let us know. But bringing the conversation back on topic then, Scott, in terms of you as a cricketer then, because you mentioned quite a few inspirations there, Chris Gayle, McCullum, Ben Stokes. How would you describe yourself as a cricketer, though, in terms of the way you approach the game?
Probably not technically the best. I don't play many shots that you'd probably see or be taught, especially when you might be taught them now if you're younger, but especially when I was younger, you didn't really get taught like a lot of the shots you'd play in T20 cricket. So pretty much unorthodox, I guess.
Did you find it hard to that sort of develop those T20 shots? Obviously, like, you've sort of grown up as a cricketer in an age where T20 is really coming into fruition and it's still developing, and we're seeing the introduction of new formats, well, all around the world. So yeah, did you sort of find it hard to develop those T20 shots, or did it sort of come naturally?
I think a lot of them just came from messing about. Like I think especially when I came into cricket as well, it was at a good time because it was mainly like McCullum, De Villiers, and it was going into a lot of white ball stuff, and then obviously the Big Bash, IPL. So you'd watch it on TV, and then I think I'd probably just muck about with my brother at the nets, and oh, I'll try a scoop, or bat left-handed for a bit whenever we're bored, we'd just bat left-handed, or if it was like raining, we're playing change room cricket, we'd try bat left-handed, and I think they all just came from there, really, just messing about with them, and then eventually over the last couple of years, like actually seeing how beneficial it can be and bringing it into your game.
Yeah. I guess that's modern cricket and sort of how it's developed. And yeah, different shots and unique shots come from different places, don't they? So it'd be interesting to know how guys like Josh Butler and Dilshan, you know, developed their, well, Dilscoop or Ram and things like that, and how they sort of came about. Because it's not really, as you say, it's not orthodox at all. It's a sort of thing like traditional.
You'd never really be taught it, would you? Like,
yeah, exactly. But saying that though, I feel like now you're taught it a lot more, especially in like county setups, maybe not so much in like club games, but certainly in county setups, you know, if you've got a young player who's clearly good and clearly has the technique, then why not teach it him? Because if you know that from an early age, 12, 13, then you can only keep improving it, can't you, when you get to sort of 2021. So, yeah, I feel like maybe that's something that people are getting taught a lot more.
Yeah, I think it should be taught, because you're not really going to forget the basics, like, you know, like orthodox shots. And then if you have them and you want to improve your game and be like the best you can be, then I don't see why you shouldn't practice shots where you can hit different balls to like 3-4 different parts of the ground.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite an interesting topic or thought, I guess.
It is, yeah. I'd agree with that. And not only that, when we first saw those shots, they were considered quite unique and extraordinary. And nowadays, everyone tries the ramp, don't they? We keep on seeing it so many times in franchise cricket and county cricket as well. And now it is almost becoming a bit of the norm almost. So, yeah, it is. It's interesting to see the evolution of T20 shots and, of course, batsmanship in general, because we mentioned traditionalists. They would be used to watching players only play along the carpet, for example. Look at Jeffrey Boycott. I mean, I can't imagine how he would react to a ramp or a scoop or a switch hit. But yeah, it is very interesting. And I'm sure over the years as well, we'll see more evolution as time goes by. But Scott, in terms of your shot selection and your arsenal, what do you say is the trademark Scott Steele shot?
I'd say probably the switch hit. I've done that a few times in the Blast, and a lot of, at least like the Durham bowlers and teams we play against quite a lot know that, especially if I was opening in the power play and traditional field, the bowler would probably come round the wicket and have long off cow or deep square long on. Then I'd tend to first ball, second ball, third ball, try, hit it, swap to left-handed and hit it over like where point would be, because there's no real man there. And
there's no cover there, is there?
Nah, all I need to do is hit it more than 30 yards. And if you practice it, as long as I know I just have to keep my head still and I should hit it. And then even a top edge, you'd hope you'd get it over 30-yard circle. So you either get 4-6 or like a 2, worst-case scenario.
How early do you go in terms of like switching to a left-hander? How early?
Depending on the bowler. Depending on the bowler, if I faced him before, I'd probably go first ball. So basically before he gets to his jump, I'd have my hands loose so I can swap them. And as he's getting into his delivery stride, I'd swap to left-handed. And if they don't know I play it, then they'll not pull out because I won't be looking for it.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like there's, like, for example, if he bowls like, well, I mean, I was going to say if he bowls wide down, for example, if he's going to bowl a wide yorker to a right-hander, but then it's a wide anyway, isn't it?
So yeah, but I feel like he's not
going to...
Especially at the top of the order, he's not going to go wide yorker. A lot of the time they try dig it into the pitch, especially if they've got like two men on the leg side. They're going to try bowl it into the pitch and get you to like slog it to the mid-wicket. So I try, I normally put both my feet behind the crease line. Like instead of having one in, one out, I put both behind if I'm going to play the switch hit. And then when I turn around, it means like the ball, that it would be automatically a bit shorter so you can get under it. So by moving my feet, it already made the length of the ball like a couple of inches shorter. So it already makes it a bit easier for you. But if you get out, you do look like a massive idiot.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
But I guess that's a gamble. I guess that's a gamble you have to take, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
like if you back yourself to play that shot. Then...
If your coach and that knows your player, and if it's one of your strengths where it might come off 8-9 times out of 10, you can kind of get away with looking like an idiot for one game and getting out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you'd never tried that in the nets and just randomly
tried it. I think they'd be a bit annoyed, but if they knew you played it, then they'd be like, oh, well, it didn't work this time, but keep trying it.
Yeah, like if you got out to a cover drive, no one would be saying that was a stupid shot to play. So I guess, if it's your thing, go for it kind of thing.
Yeah, I know a lot of the lads that play it. I spoke to George Munsey in Scotland when we were away with them, and he's hit me loads of times, and I've seen him play it loads of times. He plays like 3 reverse sweeps and a switch hit. He probably backs himself to play that better than he'd play a cover drive. So he'd rather get out playing that shot. It's just the same as getting bowled, like playing a cover drive or caught behind to him, because he feels that's one of his strengths and he's going to hit. He doesn't really see it as a risk shot. He sees it as just like, well, it's just a normal shot. I'm going to hit it.
Again, that's a very interesting perspective. And it does come back to, again, evolution. I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? Because, well, I'd say for myself personally, of course, I've nowhere near as much talent. But for me, I suppose the drive, that would be a normal dismissal.
Yeah.
But then to think that there are players out there such as yourself, George Munsey as well, great example there, very unorthodox in many ways with his shot selection, particularly against spin. It's interesting to get that different perspective, definitely from a batsman. But there you did mention, Scott, Durham. And I suppose we do have to mention Durham and your journey into county cricket in the first place, I suppose. So what do you remember from your debut for Durham?
I remember the one day debut came first. I think it was two or three Chambo games, and then the one day comp started, 2019, I think it was. We had a one day friendly against Essex in the second team, and then I did okay in that game. And then basically we got a new coach in. So it was basically if you did well, you'd get picked. He didn't already have his set 11, which helped. So I did all right in that game. And then he rang me saying, oh, you're going to open in the one day against Northants. And it was at home. So I remember they had Jason Holder, but none of our lads had faced him. So we were doing like pre-game like analysis. And I'd just watched him on telly. And I thought with the size of him, I thought, oh, he's going to bowl fast. And he was the opener. And I just remember thinking, like, as long as I don't get out first ball, I'll be happy. So I remember, I think Clarkey placed first ball, got a one, and then I was on strike. And it was at home as well, so like everyone was clapping when we walked out. And I remember first ball, I just thought, right, just play a forward defence. Don't care how quick it is, just block it. And I think I must have played the block before the ball even bounced. And I blocked it. And I thought, right, I haven't got a first baller. So next, just get a one. And I think a couple balls later, I dropped and ran and got a one. And then the whole crowd just like cheered and celebrated, which was a good feeling because normally you only get like a handful of fans at second team games. So it was the first time really playing in front of a crowd. So that was quite a good moment, even though it was only one run. It was like a good start, really. And then it turned out he actually didn't bowl as fast as I thought he would. So I felt a bit more settled.
How momentous of an occasion was that for you personally?
Yeah, it was huge. When you're little, you always dream about like representing Durham and being a professional cricketer and like playing for your home county, but you don't ever think it's actually really going to happen. And then I'd play a few second team games and I'd always see it as like I'm not really going to get any further in it. And then you mix with a few of the first team lads and you start training with them in the winter, and then when you finally get told that you're going to be in the squad and play, that's quite a big moment. And especially with it being at home, which was even better because it was in your home crowd and home fans were there.
Yeah, it's quite a spine-tingling moment, something like, maybe that's a good word, goosebumps moment kind of thing, I guess would be. I mean, that's how I probably would feel if I played it for Lancs, which is obviously never going to happen. Well, never say never, you know, never say never, but there's a 99% chance it won't happen. So, yeah. But no, it is a pretty cool experience, I would assume, playing for your home county, at home as well. I feel like when people make their away debut first, it's always, or make their debut away from home, it's always a bit like,
yeah,
you've got to wait that much longer. And there's never that guarantee, obviously, that you're going to play every game. So you could make your debut away from home and then you could maybe get injured. Maybe you'll get just perform badly and get dropped. So I guess playing at home as well would be quite a relief almost because like you've made it at home as well.
Yeah, I was lucky enough, but like two out of the three debuts were at home. And then one was at Lords, so that one was all right, I guess, to be aware.
But Scott, on that day, do you remember what you actually got in terms of a score?
60, maybe.
Close, 68 from 65 balls.
Did I? I remember how I got out, though. I think I tried to hit one from off stump over cow corner and got bowled.
Jeez.
Stump go flying?
Yeah, I think we still had about 20 overs left as well, maybe more. And I thought, I'm just going to hit
one on debut.
I think I was just surprised that I got more than one run. So I was like, get in. And I think I hit a straight drive for four, and I never ever do that. And I thought, right, I'm on here. And then I tried to hit one from off stump over cow corner because they had no man there and just missed it and got bowled. I remember walking off, I was thinking, Proctor maybe?
It was indeed Luke Proctor.
Was it?
And yep. I think, definitely X-Lanx. You can't argue that.
No, I can't argue that X-Lanx. One.
But yeah, nah, I mean, close to that 100, but yeah. What was it like then facing Holder if you had to sort of like, I mean, you say he wasn't as quick as you expected him to be. What about like some of the, because obviously he's one of the best in the world, you know, owning the ball in red ball and white ball cricket. What was he like to face with a new white ball?
I think it was quite hard as well. He swung it quite a bit, even with the white ball. But I think it was hard as well because he's about a foot taller than me. So his length balls were like coming at my
short balls, yeah.
Yeah, so luckily he didn't stick one right in past my head, but his like fuller balls or length balls were like rising on you a bit, so a lot of the shots were off the back foot, so it's quite difficult in that perspective because of the height and that, but it didn't get me out, so that's all right.
A lot of batsmen say that though, because with Holder with that extra height there is just that little extra element of bounce, and that's what catches batsmen out.
But then his hand comes from even higher, doesn't it? So
yeah,
he's obviously taller than you, but then his hands are also another meter higher up or something.
Yeah. And the skill that he possesses to just bowl such a consistent line of length. Certainly in red ball cricket, he showed that in the test series this summer, to bowl such a consistent line of length. And he got a five for obviously in the first test. And just the amount of, you know, the skill he possesses to be able to swing the ball. And in white ball cricket, it's so weird because you get a load of swing, don't you, in like the first few overs and then just no swing after that.
Yeah,
really, generally. Yeah.
Especially so, in the one days, because they have two new balls.
Yeah, so exactly.
So you can try smack one and get it out, like stop it swinging, but then the other end's still a new ball.
Yeah. So it's even a more added challenge, if you like.
Yeah.
But let's talk, Scott, a little bit about your first season in Canterbury cricket as a whole. What would you say some of the lessons that you learned were from, you know, that debut season?
I think definitely in the T20 stuff, because I was new to it, I didn't really open and just kind of came about accidentally, and it did all right, so I kind of got stuck with it. But I learned in T20s, I thought like T20s, you'd just swing from ball one and try as many sixes as you could. And my first game was against Northants again, and I just kept swinging and kept missing it. And Darcy, who was our overseas at the time, was like, look, just chill out a bit, just try hit it instead of trying to hit every ball to the moon. So I think I learned that you don't have to necessarily hit every ball out the ground. And he was a good example of that, because even in the power play, he'd not smack it, and because he knows he'd be able to catch up at the end. Whether they had four men out or they had two men out, it didn't really matter to him.
Yeah, Darcy Shaw is, I feel, someone who's definitely not had as much opportunity in international cricket, but when he has, you know, he just looks such a good player. So it's not exactly a bad guy to have at the other end, is it?
It was good, especially with it being first year as well, with the experience he had. I think he just came back from the IPL. He played for Australia a few times, I think, in the one days, and obviously played Big Bash, and he'd done pretty well the last two or three seasons. So it was good to have at the other end, especially with it being your first year.
I do just have a question for you, Scott, because in there you mentioned that the opening role just came about almost by chance then for you. Yeah. What do you view yourself as in terms of a role? Because I thought that you were pretty much a natural opening batsman. Do you not see yourself in that way?
No, I do now. I see myself as an opener now, but before last season, I opened a little bit in red ball stuff and then moved to middle order. And then I think we had like quite a strong second team. So I was always in the middle order, like 4, 5, 6 in the white ball stuff. And then our coaches kind of swapped a bit. And basically, first game of the new season, they just said, oh, do you want to open? And they just thought I was an opener. And I opened and managed to get 100. So that's how I got in opening for the one days. So it was kind of not really an accident, but I wasn't a full-on opener. And it just suited me. I guess it was kind of a good thing that it was found, really.
Jeez, yeah. I mean, there are such things as lucky accidents, I suppose. And
yeah,
that proved to be a masterstroke. Wow, that's a really interesting... I didn't know that, I'm going to be honest. That's very, very interesting.
It's one of them things that just happens, like I say, it's a bit by chance.
Or destined kind of to thing. Happen.
But now it's happened. Fate, I guess. That's very cliche, but...
I don't think I would have played that season if I hadn't opened that first game. I don't think I'd have played the games I did.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Interesting. So that's how it happened. But yeah, I mean, looking back on that now, do you ever sort of... do you have any regrets sort of from the... you know, your debut season, and in terms of, you know, specifically in the T20s, do you have any regrets of, or anything that happened during that season?
Have a regret of one of the one days when I fell over and got run out.
Where was it at? Was that
our home game?
Yeah, that's why then. Yeah, because you only play one home, one away. Sorry, four home, four away, don't you? You did in 2019, so it wasn't Old Trafford. So yeah, I wouldn't have gone to that, but. That's an unfortunate thing to happen.
It just happens that the game was live streamed, and I think it's on a few Facebook pages and Instagram pages.
Yeah, that's not ideal. There's been a few funny moments, hasn't there?
Well, the worst part was I fell over, like trying to turn back to the keeper's end. And I fell over, and then as he threw it, I tried to like jump and dive, and then when it hit the stumps, I was still out my crease. So I tried to go through the effort to get back in, and I was still out by...
And you still got out.
Yeah.
Would you say that... I don't know if you've seen it. I'm pretty sure Aaron will have. You may have done on social media when Laurie Evans got run out in a T20 blast.
Against Hampshire.
For Sussex, yes. I don't really know what that was doing. Would you say that sounds weirder, Aaron, than the Laurie one? Because
actually spoken to Laurie about that. And it's
Is that when he tried to run, when it went to the keeper or something?
He didn't know where the ball was.
Yeah, and he turned around and didn't know where the ball was.
Nah, his is worse than mine, I think. Did you not see Triscothics in the second team? I don't think he got out, but he fell over twice. in the same run.
Yep, I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that.
He went to run a three or something and slipped over twice.
Yeah, I've seen that. If, to be honest, if I was playing in that game and Triscothic had done that, I just wouldn't have run him out. You can't run Triscothic out like that, can you?
Nah.
Marcus Triscothic. I just still don't think anything will beat Samit's run out in the Character Championship. That's arguably the funniest county incident in the last decade. That was quality. So yeah, personally, I don't think anything will ever top that in terms of humorous runouts or humorous cricket moments. But let's chat a little bit, Scott, now about the 2020 season, because obviously it was so strange. There was obviously no fans. You mentioned on your debut a little bit before about how you were playing in front of a full house or a near full house compared to when you've played, you know, second team and there's been a handful of people there. But what would you say your personal highlight was from the 2020 season?
I'd say just like getting selected to play again. Obviously it was a strange time and a strange winter, and the season got like postponed a few months, so you never really knew if you were going to play at all. So to have any games was good, and then to be able to play the T20s again, even though it didn't really go as planned personally, but we turned it round from getting, I think when we lost the first five games and we hadn't won a Chambo game, and basically everyone was writing us off and we just needed that win, and then we had a break, and then the next five, I think we won the next four games. So I think that was a good moment in the season, because unfortunately we just got beat to knots. And if we won that, we'd have qualified, which we probably should have won, but it didn't go our way.
Yeah. It's just so frustrating not having any fans then. Did you find it weird? Obviously you've now played, you know, in 2019, you played, you know, a bunch of T20 games in front of a crowd all around the country, all around the north. And did you find that, or how did you find that experience sort of playing in front of empty stadiums?
At first it was a little bit strange because you knew the occasion, like you're leading up to the game or the few days before the game, like, right, the T20 season's back, like the blast's back. And then you get to the game and obviously there's no crowds. Like, it's not the same build-up, but in the same way, it wasn't too dissimilar to, I'd only played a season, so a lot of the time I've played is in front of no crowds. Yep. So it wasn't too much of a shock like that. I think it was just more of the occasion. It was like a T20 game and it didn't feel as much of a big game as it was because there was no crowds there. It was as if you were kind of just playing a friendly.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because a lot of people have said how surreal they found it. A lot of guests who we've had on the show have said how surreal they found it. So I guess that's looking at it from a different perspective in a way.
It was just weird because even when you have a second team game, there's at least like 10 people there watching. But here there was like literally no one apart from your players and staff and their players and staff.
Yeah.
So it was just like as if you were just having a net session pretty much. So there was like nobody there at all.
Yeah. Such a weird year.
It was, yeah. 2020 it's pretty much been a write-off. But talking of the 2020 T20 Blast then, Scott, I do have to ask this as well, because this was a bit confusing to me personally, and I think, let me just look at the fan questions. I'm pretty sure, yes, it was Glenn at RunGMC16 actually asked, why did you move down the batting order? Because in 2019, you had an absolute standout year. You're absolutely fantastic. You're Durham's second leading run scorer behind only Darcy Short as your opening partner. And then this year, you were moved down to about, was it 6 or 7 in the batting order? Was that tactical or what actually went on there? Why did that move come about?
I got moved to 8. Basically, we weren't winning any games and the coach rang and we had Berhardine coming in. He just had to quarantine for the first three games. And I hadn't got a score really in the first two or three games. So the coach decided we hadn't been winning. So I'd moved down to 8 and he put, I think Rainey went up to 3, which worked in the end. I think Rainey got a 70 or 80 and smashed at all parts of ground at Durham. But yeah, I think they said they just wanted to mix it up, do something different to try get a win. And then we started winning, so it just stayed at 8, basically.
Were you okay with that personally or not?
I didn't. Obviously didn't want to be at 8 because I'd seen myself and all the chats we had was to be top order batsman and get off to a good start and try win games for the team. But if we won games, so it must have worked, I guess. I didn't contribute much down at 8, but our top order, when Rainey went up, I think he got 360s in a row, I think, or 260s and like a 50. So it worked for the team, I guess, yeah.
Fair enough. So very team-orientated, Scott. I respect that. Instead of just being individually focused. But talking about your time at Durham then, because you had two seasons at the Riverside. So looking back on those two seasons, of course, your home county, what do you say was your favourite moment in those two seasons?
I guess making, well, all three debuts can kind of be a one. That's one of my favourite moments because it's what you want to do as a kid, and to say that you've represented your county, even in just one of the formats, would have been enough. But managed to play, I think, a full season in two of the comps, and then two games at the end of the season in the 4-day stuff was a good moment and was a proud moment. And then I'd probably say getting 50 on my debut, because I made my debut, and then obviously the next thing you'd want to get a 50, and I managed to get a 50 on my debut, so it was like two good things on one day, really.
Did you, when you sort of obviously got your 50, did you make a bit of a big deal out of it? Not a big deal, but did you show a lot of emotion, I guess you could say? Or did you just kind of get on with it?
Nah, I don't think so. I think I was more happy about it once I was out and you got to reflect on it.
Yeah.
It was kind of just like, oh, I've got 50 and kept going and got on with it. But it was a good moment. It was like a proud moment to,
yeah,
I think it kind of cemented myself as well, because like if I got a duck first game, then I probably wouldn't have got the opportunities I had last season. Whereas I got 50 first game and then another 50 later in the competition. It was kind of like, oh, well, we'll give them a little bit of a run, see how he goes.
Yeah.
So I think it was the best time to get it at any time, really, first game.
Yeah, without a doubt. And let's look back on, as we've said, you know, your career so far with Durham. What would you say, you know, we just talked about some more positive moments. What would you say some of your, or the toughest moment has been so far in your Durham career?
Probably I got dropped from the 4-day side last year, made my debut at Lords, and then the next week we played at North Hants and we had to win, like we had to win the next three games to get promoted, I think it was. So it was like a good energy. We beat, smashed Middlesex in 2.5 days. I think Bryden got 5 for or 6 for. And then we played at North Hants, but we got beat by North Hants. And then I got dropped for the final game against, I think it was Gloucester or Glamorgan, one of them two. But it got rained out in the end. But that was probably a low point because I'd just got in the team. Like I never thought I'd get in the 4-day stuff. Like it wasn't really suited to me. And they always played Travascus as the spinner. So they had a spinner and he batted about 8 as well. So he had a good run in the season. And then one of the lads got injured and we had an inter-squad game. Basically, if you did well in the inter-squad game, you'd probably go to Lords. And I think I only got like 30. But I was sitting down with Wack, the second team coach, and he does like when you make your debut, you get your cap or your name goes on the board, like in the hallway where all the boxes are. There's like your media picture and your cap number. So he like puts all them on the wall, and he was framing someone else's that had made the debut the week before. And we were just joking on, and he said, oh, it could be you. And I was just like, nah, it won't happen for a while. And then next game, come to Lords, and I thought, oh, I'll just be like 12th man, come down for a week, be with the lads, and turned out I played, so.
Fair enough. It's pretty sudden, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And then I played two games, and one game left, and then got dropped, so that was quite a bad moment, because I just got myself in, and then got out of it pretty much straight away.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Obviously, like, it takes blood, sweat and tears, isn't it? You know, getting to that stage where you can play a first-class game and then you're in and then you're out, I guess. Yeah, and that's absolutely fair enough. But, yeah, new opportunities at Leicestershire. So, fingers crossed, we'll be seeing you in more Red Bull cricket. Just one more quick question. Who would you say the toughest bowler that you faced has been in your career? I mean, we've already mentioned Jason Holder. I assume he's probably up there. Aside from him, maybe.
Yes, James Anderson in a one day with a white ball, so it wasn't as tricky as he would have been with a red ball. But he's just, it sounds stupid, but he never bowled a bad ball. So I was trying to hit him over his head or like hit him on the leg side, but he just never seemed to bowl a bad ball.
You couldn't?
I couldn't do anything. It just kept hitting me in the thigh or like missing it. And in the end, I was just trying to get off strike. Had Mahmood bowling at the other end, which was bowling rockets, but I'd rather face him because Anderson just kept making me look stupid. And then same again at Lords, Tim Murder. He just kept hitting me in the pad. I think he got me out LB, both innings. And he's not exactly fast. He just, again, clever with the ball and basically just outdone me, just kept hitting me in the pad. I kept moving across my crease to try and get out of the way of it or hit it over mid-wicket and just couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, obviously, neither of them are easy to face. I mean, Jimmy's the best ever seamer. So, yeah, he's never going to be easy to face. But yeah, Murtagh, I feel like, always goes under the radar. And took that fiver, didn't he, for Ireland in 2019, which Aaron knows about because he was there before. So, yeah, tricky bowlers to face, without doubt.
Yeah, definitely. Just very, I want to say, wily characters, the veteran seamers, Anderson and Murtagh. But Joe, as you alluded to there in your little passage before that question, Scott, you have made the move to Leicestershire. Now, this has interested us for weeks. How many times have we mentioned it on the podcast? Mentioned it quite a few.
A lot.
In the weekly ones.
A lot. There's something building at Leicestershire.
Yeah. The quiet revolution, as we've coined it with Sean Jarvis and Paul Nixon. So, Scott, we have to ask this then. How did the move to Leicestershire materialise in the first place? Because we had that news from Durham about, what was it? I think there were 7 contract extensions. And then there's a little statement in that little passage which said Scott Steele hasn't renewed his contract. And suddenly there's a load of news, gossip. I mean, Joe, you thought at some point you're going to make the move to Lancashire. So, Scott, how did the move to Grace Road come about in the first place?
It came quite early. At first, obviously, it was a pretty weird season, and I was always out of contract at the end of the season at Durham. And before the T20s started, Leicester basically showed interest that they wanted to sign me. But I was obviously from Durham, and I kind of brushed it off at first, just heard basically, like, spoke to them to see what their deal would be, but hoping I'd get a deal from Durham. And then I think Durham found out and they said, look, they said that they had a contract for me, but it was different to the Leicester contract. And then the T20s came about and I opened. And then when I kind of got dropped down to 8, I kind of felt that I didn't really have a role in the side. I felt that because we didn't have another right arm off spinner in the squad or in the staff players, I kind of felt that the only reason I was in the side is because we didn't have another spinner. I was kind of like, look, we'll see. We'll talk to Leicester, see about the Leicester deal. And then basically, as the T20s went on, it was kind of contract against contract, seeing what Durham would offer, seeing what Leicester would offer. And in the end, Durham's offer was a 1-year deal, but Leicester's was a 3-year deal. So it was kind of security over anything. I know Durham released a statement or something saying that they couldn't fulfill my requirements, and so that's why I left. But it was basically just with COVID coming around and obviously bad 8 this season, if I didn't play next season or we didn't get any crowds in, which didn't generate money for the club, then I reckon an easy way would have been to get rid of me. And then it would have been a lot harder to find another county at the end of next season, whereas Leicester have offered a 3-year deal, which offers security. And then they've made quite a lot of signings, and I spoke to Leicester and the club's going in a massive direction. Like, they're starting something at the minute, which I think in years to come, they'll be one of the strongest teams there. So basically, when I spoke to Leicester, it was all positive and it was where I wanted to be, really. And then I just let Durham know that I wasn't going to sign my contract and I was moving to Leicester.
Exactly, the quiet revolution. I know we're going to keep on mentioning it, but it is so true. And I suppose, Scott, you were the catalyst of that. You were their first, like, big signing. They've obviously signed Rishi Patel, Eddie Barnes as well from Yorkshire. I agree with you. There is just something brewing at Grace Road. And we as county cricket fans, myself and Joe, absolutely love it. There's something exciting going on.
It's very interesting.
Everyone's excited, I think, as well. Like, we haven't been in yet because obviously we got furloughed again and whatever's gone on the last month or so. But I can't wait to go in. We've had quite a lot of Zoom calls just messing about with Nico and the lads. And we had a question of sport last night. Parky's team played against Wrighty's team, and unfortunately us on Parky's team didn't win. But there's just a good energy about it, and we're not even in the ground yet. Like, everyone's messaging in the group chats, everyone's out doing the training, and it's a good time to be at the club. I think I'd never put much effort into Leicester before I signed. I didn't really know about the club, and only from playing against the lads, but it's a real big energy at the minute, and I can see that it's going to be such a strong side. It's quite a young side as well, which is good. There's a few older players, Ackerman, Wrighty, Klein, but it's all experience in quite a young side. And last year, they just got beat in the quarterfinal, didn't they? semi-final,
yes.
quarter-final.
Yeah, that was heartbreak for Leicester.
Great game.
Really, yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and because I was actually, you've kind of already answered the question I was going to ask, which is, have you been around some of the guys? And obviously that's been hard, but how much have you been around them? But I guess I could alter that question slightly and ask, does it help having played against, you know, these guys before? Do you find you're able to get to know them as an opposition, you know, when you were playing for Durham, and now that you're a Leicestershire player, do you find that's helped?
Yeah, I knew a few of them because we always play Leicester in the second team, so I knew quite a few from playing against them and played T20s against them at Leicester, and then obviously this year we played against them, so I already knew quite a few of the lads from playing against them or like just seeing them in places, and they're all dead welcoming. And Nico, I didn't know him until before this season, and like it went on that I'd been in contact with Nico, and then we played against Leicester twice, which was like no one really knew. So no one apart from, I think, the staff at Durham and the staff at Leicester knew about it all. So like we'd be playing against Leicester and it was kind of like we knew what was going on, and it was like weird. But no, I went in, met a few of the lads because I went down Leicester for a week, met a few of the lads, and then I went in the ground one day and had a look around and that, and everything's just good about it. Everything's changing. They've brought out a new, like, running foxes, and they're constantly bringing things out on the Twitter, and they got, like, back to their original colours, and they're just going in a good direction at the minute.
Again, I guess you kind of already answered this question a little bit, but who are you most looking forward to playing with at Leicestershire? Because obviously, as we've mentioned, you've already mentioned a couple of the guys there. Who are you most looking forward to playing with?
I think probably Parky and Lily, because I've seen like Lily hits at Miles, he hit me Miles when we played against them, and Parky's got me out numerous times, I think, in second team cricket, and I think just like looking forward to watching them go about how they do it. And Parky's probably one of the best left arm spinners there is, and he doesn't get as much recognition as he should, and hopefully he does well this season and everyone gets to see how good he really is.
Yeah, Aaron Lilley, what a player he is. I'm so disappointed when let him go.
Joe. Yeah, there we go.
I was so disappointed when we let him go because, yeah, he was quality. At number three, Davis, Livingston and Lilley as a top three. That was some top order. But, yeah, I mean, I think, again, they're both fair choices there.
Definitely. And, yeah, for Leicestershire fans listening to this, Scotty's looking quite happy. And I'm glad to see that. I really am. That's put a smile on my face as well. I'm glad to see you're happy, Scott. And obviously looking forward to a brand new challenge at Grace Road. Exciting times. Fingers crossed we as fans will be allowed back there next season for when the Bears ultimately beat the Foxes to move on to finals day. It's just not going to happen.
What was it? Seven for what?
7 for 18, Joe. I know, I was there in the stands 18, watching it.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that was against you lot.
Yeah, on Sky as well. But Scott, heading into 2021 then, what do you say in terms of your personal game are you looking to improve upon heading into next season?
I think especially on my red ball cricket skills, especially batting and bowling as well, to be fair. I haven't played a great deal of red ball and I focus a lot more on my white ball at Durham, and I think trying to get in the red ball team and basically work on a few technical things that'll make me like good in red ball cricket and hopefully get a lot of runs in that.
Fair enough. And that is quite interesting, though, because for those who don't know as well, Scott, you're going to be eligible for Scotland as well. Obviously, Scotland aren't a test-playing nation as of yet. But I'm glad to hear that you still got the red ball in mind. That's very nice. And in terms of the rest of your career then, Scott, what are you looking to achieve in terms of your county cricket career in particular? What have you got your eyes on in terms of personal milestones?
Hopefully play regularly for Leicester in all three formats and hopefully win some trophies with them. In the white ball stuff, whether it's T20s or one days, try and get a finals day and win the finals day for them.
Yeah, fair enough. And as we mentioned, so close to finals day last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's definitely attainable for Leicestershire. Obviously, the structure hopefully will look different next season because it will go back to the traditional two group format in a T20. But as I say, I think finals day for Leicester is definitely attainable. And on a normal year, I mean, Leicestershire obviously would have got through in a normal year and wouldn't have played Notts either, so because that was weird because they're in the same group. But Lancs-Sussex was the only game that wasn't in the same group in the quarters. So yeah, that's 2020 for you, isn't it? That is 2020 for you.
It sure is. And heading into 2021 and beyond, Scott, of course, we here at the County Cricket Podcast wish you the very best of luck. And if we are,
yeah, without a doubt,
if we are back in the ground, you'll probably see me there. And yeah, should be fun that, seeing you in Leicestershire colours, in the green and red for the first time in years as well. I mean, how nice is that? Good job from the Foxes, I think. That should be nice in the old pit. But that does bring us to a conclusion to this segment then. So just before we move on to teammates then, Scott, we do have a couple of fan questions. And the first one is from your Scotland teammate, your skipper-to-be, Carl Kurtzer. And he says, who is the best medium pacer that you've ever faced in the nets?
Definitely not him.
Big hint there, wasn't he? From who asked that question?
He claims he gets a lot of wickets in the nets. And he actually plays, when I was back at Durham and playing club cricket, the club he plays for is in the same league as mine. So we always joke on that, like when we play that fixture, he's going to get me out and I'm just going to try hit him out the ground basically. But we haven't played since. No, we haven't played since because COVID happened and then I moved clubs and we didn't get to play each other. But he does turn his arm over in the Scotland nets and gets quite a few wickets, but I don't think he's got me yet.
Well, I think we need some kind of a net battle between Scott Steele and Kyle Kurtzer. If possible, on YouTube or something like that, whenever that can happen. Well, that would be interesting. A bit of banter there. But who is the best medium pacer we've ever faced in the nets?
Apart from Kyle, who's the best medium pacer? I don't know, really.
Matt Wood?
Medium pacer, nice. Wow.
A bit faster, him, I think. Kyle can have it. Kyle Kurtzer.
Well, there you go, Kyle.
I wouldn't say he's a medium pacer, though. He's more slow medium. Yeah, medium pacer's a bit generous for him, but can have it.
Yeah, there you go, Carl. Well done. Got your question in and you got the correct answer as well. So moving on to our next one. This is from a friend of mine, actually, called Brad, who went to the same sixth form. What is your go-to meal deal at Tesco?
Probably chicken salad sandwich, maybe. A bottle of Fanta.
Which flavour? Normal?
Fruit twist. I like fruit twist. And then some hula hoops.
Again, which ones?
Ready salted.
Ready salted. Always ready salted crisps. Only two crisp flavours you can have is ready salted and salt and vinegar. They're the goats of crisp flavours. I'll be honest, I did not expect to be talking about that at the start of the County Cricket Podcast.
Exactly, but yeah, that's my friend Brad for you. Brad, there you go. Scott has answered your question there, mate. Do whatever you want with that information. And the third and final one is from a former guest of ours, actually. And Scott, your ex-teammate at Durham. And this is from Liam Javaskis. he asked, how far are you going to hit me next season? But actually, I'm going to flip this question and say, if you do face off next year, who's going to win that battle?
Oh, us, for sure.
No, in terms of us individual, sure. though. So let's say Liam's having a ball at you.
Nah, me. Trev's getting hit out of the ground. And then I'm going to get him out as well.
Who tends to win in the nets?
Me.
Fair enough. You got to back yourself, haven't you? You got to back yourself.
I just try and slog him and he gets in a huff because I'm slogging him. I'm going to keep hitting him for boundaries and then I'm going to get him out as well.
So you got to practice hard in the winter, Liam, now to make sure Scott doesn't do that to you. I think Scott probably fancies his chances there looking at his face. So yeah, that'll be an interesting battle and one for Leicester and Durham fans to look out for. But yeah, so that does bring us to the end of the fan questions. Now, before we close out today's podcast, we do have everyone's favourite section, and that is teammates. So I'll just briefly give everyone a reminder, all the listeners a reminder of what teammates is. So we've got 10 or so questions written down, and we're going to ask Scott, related to his Durham teammates, the various questions. So, for example, the first question is, at Durham, who has the best nickname?
Who has the best nickname? I don't know, really. They're all just people's names, aren't they?
That is exactly what David Payne said.
And Jeets.
Oh, was it Jeets as well? Yeah.
They're all just people's names. So.
They're all just people's names with like a Y on the end.
Yeah, no one really. They're all just anyone's name with a Y on the end, yeah.
What about yours, Scott? What was yours in the dressing room?
Probably Staley.
Of course it was. Yeah, again, following the trend, just add a Y. Well, fair enough. I think that's the first time we haven't really had one then. Durham, you need to sharpen up a bit with the old nicknames. Get a bit more creative. Yeah,
improve the nicknames, please, Durham.
Moving on to our next one then. There will be an answer to this one. Who is the teacher's pet at Durham?
This is the teacher's pet. What, like, works the hardest or...
And always around the coaches, yeah.
Oh, probably Gaz Hart, maybe.
Nearly ruined the next question then. Well, not the next one, but a few questions down. So actually, I'll save that. actually, that point for another bit. But the next question is, who's hard as nails?
None of them. Who's hard as nails? Probably wouldn't like to get on the wrong side of big coggers.
Mm.
Maybe Rainey. Wouldn't really like to meet any of them two on a bad day. Or Burnham, probably one of them three.
If you had to choose one, though.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Burnham.
There you go, Jack.
Definitely Burnham.
That's a nice one, to be fair, for teammates.
Is he always in the gym?
Oh, no. He's just angry, isn't he?
When he gets out, is his back gone across the changing room? That kind of thing.
Sometimes, I think, yeah. Not as much now, but he definitely has before.
Fair enough.
Yeah, seems like a fair choice then. Moving on to our next one then. Who's Mr. Celebration?
Potsy likes a celebration. He gives a fist pump in the air or a little bit of a celebration with a finger up like Shearer. Probably Potsy.
Funny you mentioned Shearer. Right. Doesn't Mark Wood shout that when he kicks the ball to the stumps?
Yeah, he tries to kick it off the stumps and shout Shearer, but...
Is he accurate at kicking at the stumps?
Or I haven't ever seen him do it, but I think he does hit it sometimes. I think he's got a wicket like that, actually, but I don't know. I've never really seen him do it.
No, fair enough. What's your celebration when you get a wicket?
Don't really have one.
Acknowledge the crowd.
Yeah, just...
High five.
Yeah.
You can't beat a classic high five, can you?
Nah.
Well, an elbow bump this year, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, elbow or foot taps. You have to kick them, yeah.
So the next one is player's player, and in terms of that, I don't mean sort of best player, I mean like Mr. Popular kind of thing.
Mr. Popular. Probably Woody when he's back, or Stewie Pointer. He's quite popular with everyone. He's an all-round nice guy, gets on with everyone. It's Stewie.
And they're solid choices. They're obviously Woody. Yeah, he's a bit of a character, singing Jerusalem, wasn't he, at the Rose Bowl in the summer.
Yeah. I don't know anyone who doesn't like, as a supporter, doesn't like Mark Wood as a guy. He just looks like the funniest guy going. He really does. So, yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, solid choice there, Scott. Moving on to the next one, Scott, you might actually fit into this category. Who's the selfie addict?
Nah, not me. Who loves a selfie? Bryden Cast loves a picture. Or Rushy, actually. Rushy likes a picture now and again. Not so much a selfie, but on his Twitter or Facebook, he loves a standing up picture for a social media. Or Bryden, he likes a few pictures. I'd say Rushy, actually. Not so much selfie, but likes a picture. Yeah.
Like a model photo kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, like on his Facebook or Twitter, or like selfie with the dogs, maybe.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting Rushy, to be fair. I wasn't. But fair enough.
Nah, Rushy.
The next one, a little bit of a two-parter, really. The best dressed and the worst dressed.
Best dressed. I'm going to say, actually, he hasn't played any first-team games yet, but he's been in the squads or in the setup. Ollie Gibson, the young seamer, he's got like designer gears and he's got good gears. Worst dressed, probably Rushy again, but just because he's a bit older. He has like older like clothes because he's obviously a dad and he's a lot older than the young ones. So
always the older guys you get the worst dressed, isn't it?
He has different the older guys. Gears to others, but.
No, fair enough.
I knew it was coming. As soon as the cheeky smirk came, I knew it was Rushworth. So, moving on to our next one then, a bit more cricket-related. Who was the biggest badger in the Durham dressing room?
Biggest badger? What, like, loves cricket? Oh, Trev, by a mile. He'll be able to tell you everyone's stats and where they come from and, like, he'll tell you everything about any cricketer, especially in the team meetings. Like, a player comes on the board and he'll tell you what ball he bowls, when, and everything. So, yeah, Trev's the big badger, I reckon.
We've had him on the pod. He was quite good, to be fair.
It was, this is a more chilled environment.
We didn't really quiz him, did we?
Professional.
Next time you get him on, quiz him. Have a start off with him. Get him on and have a start off.
To be honest, there's a few people who we could easily do a badger off with. Maybe we need to arrange that.
Get him on.
We need one representative from each county, I feel. So we'll have to work to that. I'd be quite interested to win the ultimate badger off. But the next one, who is the dressing room joker in Durham?
It used to be Wheelie, but he got released the last season, but he was definitely the joker. Like, he'd put people's shoelaces in upside down, so like the long lace bits will be at the bottom, and he'd put deep heat in clothing.
That's a classic.
Hide things, and a lot of the time he'd like sign my bat or sign my gloves, and if I was out I'd be batting and like and have Wheelie's signature on my gloves. So him, yeah, he likes to joke.
Quite a good one.
Yeah, quite good.
The deep heat one's classic.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, that's
I've never heard
one.
Of the signature one before. That is very unique.
I don't know if it was just to me he'd do it, but he'd sign some of my stuff and I'd sign his back and it was just like a joke we had on for a while.
Very random. Moving on to the next one then. Now, I'm going to try not to laugh when I'm asking this. Who is the most likely to make an appearance on Geordie Shore?
Oh, who backs themselves? Jack Campbell. Not most likely, like, I don't vote him to be most likely, but I reckon he'd vote himself to be most likely. Definitely Jack Campbell.
Really? Why would he be on Geordie Shore?
Well, he'd have to be a guest because he's from down south, isn't he? But just like backs himself and just, I guess he'd think he'd be on it, I think. Yeah.
I'll be honest, I've never watched Geordie Shore in my life, so I can't really say whether that's... Oh, I've never watched it in my life, so I don't really know what it's about, but I just think it's some kind of a reality show. But yeah, that's a bit of a northern-themed, very northern-themed question there, BZL Scott. The next one is, who's the best footballer?
Who is the best footballer? Again, Big Coggers, he's quite good. He's fast as well, so you don't really get near him. Michael Jones, he's good. I'd say
position.
He's always all over, like, he's always everywhere, both of them are, but I'd go with Jonesy.
What about you? What position do you play when you're playing a warm-up?
I like going in net because I don't have to do anything and, yeah, don't get that involved in it and just go in net, basically.
Oh, fair enough. I hate being in net. The net's the worst place because it's so weird going from catching a cricket ball to then try to save a football or something like that. I don't know. I just find being in net weird. Yeah, the balls are just so different, aren't they? So, yeah, personally, I'm not a fan of that, but fair enough.
Personally, I am because I'm a goalkeeper, so that's relatable to me. I don't really see a difference, to be honest, but I suppose it's up to the individual. And the final one then, Scott, this is the one which has been dividing opinion for many over the course of teammates, and that is best golfer.
I don't play. I like to avoid the golf days because I'm not very good at it. But one of the lads who was good, he also got released last year, but Ben Whitehead, the leg spinner, he plays off something ridiculous, I think. I'm trying to think. I always avoid them, so I think Rushy's meant to be quite good. I'd say Whitehead, though, he was ridiculously good.
Well, there you go, Ben. Winner of the Durham's Best Golfer. I thought Rushworth would be up there as well, though. I've seen on social media posting golf.
Yeah, I'd say he's meant to be good. I'll play with a few of the lads like Jack Campbell and that who aren't that good. We'll just go play, but I'm not playing with the full team because I feel like I just get on the nerves because they'll all be waiting for me.
What about on crazy golf?
I prefer playing that, yeah. Yeah, I'd rather go play mini golf and have a few drinks.
Yeah.
Play, you know.
Serious, proper on a golf course.
Yeah, nah, I'd rather play mini golf.
Nah, fair enough.
Yeah, good choice there. I think that's very sensible. But that does bring us to an end to today's teammate segment. And of course, it also brings us to an end for today's podcast then, Scott. So just before we wrap up, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example?
No, not really. Just thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem, Scott. Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Well, that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast then. Just before we do go, if you have a Twitter account, please do go ahead and follow us at the County Crick 2. For regular county cricket and, of course, podcast updates as well. But that is it from us too at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.